Which I've just done now, and I'm just going to start the broadcast. That'll bring everybody on online, and I'll leave it up to you, Ben, to do the introductions.
Okay.
Here we go.
The broadcast is now starting. All attendees are in listen-only mode.
Ben.
Well, welcome, everybody. This is Ben Smith. I'm with the Real Wealth Network. Wanted to welcome you to this webinar. I know that you're all listening in Australia, where it's 2 p.m. there, and thank you so much for joining. We have one of our proven teams on the line today, Scott Adams with Indianapolis, Indiana, one of our most popular markets, and India's been a real proven market with consistently good cash flow for us with a fair potential for growth. We've had a lot of good feedback on Scott and Clint. I'm at this point going to turn it over to Scott, and he'll take it away. Scott,
right.
Go ahead.
Well, thanks for having me. We've really enjoyed working with Real Wealth Network for a number of years now, and just appreciate you having us on again to talk to all of the Australian clients. As he said, we are based out of Indianapolis, Indiana. We are a turnkey provider of properties. So we've been in this business for just a little over 15 years. We're a locally owned company. You've got a picture of my business partner and myself there on the screen. We both studied this market and learned it separately for years. Kind of a small community here in Indianapolis, so the few of us who kind of specialize in investment real estate all know each other pretty well.
Hey,
and we came together. Yes.
You got to tell us which one is you. You're the one on the left, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm the better looking of the two.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so I'm the one on the left. Clint's below on the right there. And again, we both had a lot of experience in this market. We had kind of different focuses. Clint was very focused on the property management side of the business, and I was more focused on the acquisition side and working with a lot more clients and helping them reach their investment goals. And then Clint, again, was focused on then helping them keep that money going, which is really the most important part of this business, and sometimes the most overlooked, is the property management side. That's where you make or break it in this business. So we've got a team of 14 staff plus leasing agents in the field and others to make this work. So as far as our Indianapolis philosophy for our company, it's trying to have everything under one roof as far as investment residential real estate needs. So a little bit about Indianapolis, especially for people who aren't as familiar with the U.S. and its structure. Indianapolis is really at the center of the U.S. It's called the crossroads of America, and part of the reason is going east or west or north or south, many of the main highways come through Indianapolis. So what that's done for us being centrally located is it's really allowed us to experience a lot of population growth and good population growth, as in employed high earners in Indianapolis, because being centralized in the U.S. We've been a real magnet for large employers, and I'll get to who the largest employers are here in Indianapolis in a minute, but we've experienced that growth that nationally is being recognized now, not just for growth, but also for what it's done for the real estate community, because that trickles down obviously into values. So I touched on the growth that we've had, and really there's a lot of employers you see on this screen who are some of the world's largest companies, but I consider it to be really three sectors. The first one is, because we're in the middle of the United States and we have a history of manufacturing in what they call the Rust Belt. One of our main manufacturing main industries here is manufacturing. So you have a lot of car manufacturers, even Rolls-Royce, who they make cars, but they're headquartered here, and they make a lot more than cars, jet engines and such. So we have a big core of manufacturing, which plays to kind of blue-collar jobs and executive jobs. The second main industry in Indianapolis that's been a driver is the biotech and pharmaceutical industries. And what happened there is Eli Lilly, one of the largest pharmaceutical manufacturers in the world, is headquartered here in Indianapolis. And because they are kind of an anchor for the industry, you have other biotech industry companies like Roche, and many of the insurance companies, the large health insurance companies, that all moved their headquarters here to Indianapolis. So that Lilly was the driver behind it, but it's become an entire sector of focus here in Indianapolis. And then the last and really the oldest industry in Indianapolis is the sports industry, which most people think of that as events, but things like the NCAA, which is the College Association of Athletics, that's big business in the U.S., and their headquarters are here. And then we have the major sports teams like the Indianapolis Colts, which is, we call it football here, but it's not soccer. It's actual American football, I guess is what you would call it. And then we have basketball, baseball teams, and then sports-related industries like Finish Line and others. So really with those three sectors, we've got a well-rounded economy that isn't just feeding off of one industry, which has played well to us having many years of pretty steady growth instead of jumps, ups, and downs. Again, this goes back to that sports and attractions, which Indianapolis is really known for. The Indy 500, of course, is well known, but this last weekend we had a NASCAR race here in town, and you have hundreds of thousands of visitors coming in from out of state, spending their hard-earned dollars here in Indy, helping our local economy. And then Colts, Pacers, NCAA, we were lucky enough to have a Super Bowl, which is, again, American football's their big event each year. And that brings in a lot more dollars than people could ever imagine. And it really transformed the city with the millions of dollars that were spent on improvements in order to land that event. So it's been a really, really important factor in shaping the quality of the downtown area. And again, that feeds off later on down the road to better roads, better economy.
Scott, if I could just chime in there with a question. You mentioned Rolls-Royce and the automotive industry. And we've all, in Australia, we've all heard a lot about, Detroit and other automotive towns. Is that a situation that might ever happen to Indianapolis? Is it likely that Rolls-Royce and others will go offshore?
It's always quite possible that, manufacturing continues, and the trend has been since really the inception of the industry, it started right away to go offshore, to spread out. But because it isn't a huge anchor here in Indianapolis, it's an industry that we really do get to enjoy the benefits of. But the manufacturing that's here in Indianapolis, a lot of it has to do more with our location and us being centrally located in the U.S. And so you get Allison Transmission located here, and it's not just because Indianapolis is the best place for them to be as far as dollars wise, but you can't beat location as far as manufacturing the transmission here and then the cost to get it to the other factories around the U.S. So we haven't seen the bleeding in that industry that a lot of other towns have seen, like Detroit. We've been very lucky with kind of being more feeder industry or feeder manufacturing for other plants. So we've enjoyed many years of pretty steady not loss of jobs in that industry, just because it's really centrally located.
Okay, thanks for that.
So I'll move on to what really matters to me. Now, I like everybody at the office makes fun of me for being a data geek and caring about the population so much and watching the statistics of growth, but really when it comes down to it, what matters to us is the properties themselves. So obviously we need a core economy that can support the property values, and we believe we have that in spades, but when it comes to it, you know, we focus on two property types. So the first property type we focus on is what we call a newer construction property. These were generally built in the 1990s or newer. Indianapolis experienced a lot of growth, as many cities did in the U.S. throughout the 1990s and early 2000s. So there was a lot of building going on here in Indy. And when the economy fell apart in 2007 in the U.S., a lot of that building stopped. So when we say newer construction, we generally mean between 1990 and 2007 when that growth really happened. We're able to pick up these houses for so much less than the cost to build them right now and sell them to our clients in what we call like new condition. Our whole goal is to go in there and make this home look just like it did the day it was built. So part of the reason we like these is investments and encourage our clients to hold them as long-term rentals is because of the low deferred maintenance costs. What makes that lower is because these houses were pretty much cookie cutter. These builders came out and they built these almost like on an assembly line, where you know all the parts are the same, the cost to fix things is the same. There aren't a lot of custom features, which is actually a selling point for us. Custom features cost extra money when they need repairs, whereas if you have a cookie cutter plain house on a cement slab with solid walls, the cost to keep that property performing the way we want is lower than the other types of investments that we've seen over the years. Another great factor for these newer construction homes is the quality of tenant we get. We get executives from some of the companies we just mentioned, actually. We get famous announcers. We just got last week, someone from a show on MTV just moved into one of our houses to film a reality show. So these homes are at that level where you get a very high quality tenant that's able to pay rents on time and continue to pay them. So tenanting them with quality tenants is easy, which that's what drives this. So if you don't have your rents, it's not worth it. And having properties that easily rent with high quality tenants is so key. It's one of the other, let me go back one more. One of the other great factors for these houses is how long the tenants stay in them. On the screen there, you'll see we say average lease is 18 months, but when you count in the fact that 75% of those tenants renew their lease, you're at a well over 3-year average for a tenant staying in the house. And every time you turn a house and get a new tenant, there's costs involved. There's little touch-ups that you have to do, and there's also the cost of leasing the house again. So one of the great features of these houses is these tenants that stay for so long. And then last, we really do encourage looking at a long-term hold as a rental and not a flip, because Indianapolis is really such a stable, steady market for the U.S. That's really one of the best strengths of Indianapolis. That's not to say that exiting these and taking a little money down the road shouldn't be looked at. And if out of all of the property types here in Indianapolis that we've seen in the investment world, these seem to have the easiest exit options. We have some investors who bought 2 years ago and are selling, their one house and buying two with the appreciation. Now, I wouldn't buy based on that. We can't expect that year after year, but we are seeing pretty steady increases in values at a much higher appreciation than we've historically had here in Indianapolis. So you've got a lot of easy exit options should something ever happen and you end up needing to exit. You know, you have a daughter getting married and you need to sell the rental house to, you know, use some money for that. These are the quickest properties to exit. The second type of property we focus on is what we call the greatest generation property type. And here in the U.S., we call the greatest generation are the folks who went to World War II and came home and then populated like crazy, the baby boom. And so we had a lot of growth in the 1950s and 60s here in Indianapolis. If you look on the screen, you'll see that these property types, they're just very simply built homes. They're on slabs, you know, four walls. Again, you know, you can focus on that deferred maintenance factor on any of our homes because we really try to lower those costs, which obviously increases your overall performance. So we try to buy the homes that have the simplest builds. The other part that's important here, especially in this type of property, is you can go on the internet and find houses that look just like this in every city in the U.S., including Indianapolis, and that doesn't mean that they're good investments. You know, we're very focused, especially on these greatest generation properties, on a few areas in Indianapolis that we know perform year after year after year with these. We could buy these all over the city, but when it comes down to it, there's really three main areas we focus on with those. So we're selective on these properties. You'll generally have a little bit higher returns than the newer construction because you can buy these so cheap and the rents are still steady and high. So it has the strengths of higher returns, really easy purchase price for real estate, that is, lower cost, the lower deferred maintenance. And these are the properties that got me started in my career 15 plus years ago and that I've continued to hold on to myself as well as my business partners held on to his. And some of the staff here has their own also that they've had for years. So, you know, these are the properties that we see a lot of investors on the ground here locally buying. And the reason is we know that these kind of hit that sweet spot of price versus return. So here's a newer construction example. This one actually just closed, I think, either last week or the week before. So they purchased it for $127,900. The rents were $1,275. Again, another newer construction property. I believe it was built in 2004. But great, simply built home. We had multiple applications from tenants who wanted this home, which is what you want. Higher demand than there are available properties, and which is part of the reason we get so excited about these is being able to buy a 2,600 square foot home for $127,000. That's pretty exciting time for us. This window of time in Indianapolis where prices are this low for so much square feet, it's just not something we've ever experienced before. So what we do with these properties is, as you can tell, it looks basically like the day it was built. We go in and we use the same materials in every home. We use the same paint scheme in every home, which is a taupe tan wall with semi-gloss white trim, and then we update the light fixtures. We update a lot of the little things that a lot of other, if you were to go out and try to buy a property just off of a listing, you won't get. So, you know, each home has blinds in every window. A lot of those little features that they don't seem like much, but in the end, they matter because you need a property, especially if you're a country away or state away, you need that property to hit the ground ready to be rented and performing from day one. And because we do, you know, 20 plus properties a month like this, that's what we focus on, is making sure that our clients, when they close on a house, it's going to perform just like we said it would. Now here's a greatest generation example. I think this slide can kind of shows why we get so excited about these greatest generation properties and why we just can't get enough of them. To be able to buy a house at $58,000 in a neighborhood where it's safe and families want to live, and you know, you have multiple applicants trying to rent these, it's just such a great time to be able to buy into these. I wish looking back, I could have had a crystal ball and known to wait years and years for properties like these, because you know, I was paying these prices for them as is and having to put $20,000+ in them over my career. So we really are enjoying this time, and our clients, needless to say, get pretty excited when they can buy a house for $58,000 that rents for $800 a month. And especially when these are in neighborhoods that we know so well and own homes ourselves in, and you know, these aren't in the kind of areas in Indianapolis where you don't want to go. You know, it's seeing it on paper, I always kind of laugh to myself that you can buy such a great home for $58,000. And I'll get briefly into the rehab and construction, but again, our goal is to make that home like new the day it was built. But we do work with how the house comes. So however the home is when we buy it, we don't go around moving walls and remodeling the home as far as its layout. So we work with what we get, but we do then bring those up to our standard. We work with multiple contractors who've worked with for many, many years. Independent contractors that are experienced. Most of our contractors have been with us through either my career or Clint's career. And knowing that these guys stand behind the work and having the systems in place to check these rehabs, to know what to look for, allows us to offer a one-year warranty with each house that we sell. The other part that makes us sleep good at night about A, the property itself, but B, being able to offer that warranty, is when we're done with the rehab, we order a third-party inspection on the home. And this person goes out, goes through the home, and he writes up generally a 20 to 30 page, very embarrassing book of things that he saw he thinks we should fix. Now, I say it's embarrassing, but the truth is that's what we want. We want him to find anything we miss. You want as many eyes on these as possible, so at the end of the day, when it hits the ground running with a tenant, you don't have a bunch of stuff to go back out and mess with. So we try to get as many eyes on this as possible. So after he gives us that report, we send our punch list crew out to the house. They repair anything that's found, and we don't just stop there. So the next thing we do is we call the inspection company again, and we say, hey, send out another inspector, make sure we repaired everything the way it should have been, and make sure no one else sees anything that the first inspector missed. So it's a process that has a lot of moving parts. We do it for the client, but we also do it for ourselves, because we want to provide a product that we can be proud of and also turn it over to our property management staff without them coming back to us saying, hey, why did you miss this, this, and this? So we have a pretty intensive process that each home goes through during its rehab. Here's an actual example of a property we have available. This one actually just finished being rehabbed, and the tenant moved in, I believe, 2 weeks ago. This was a custom home. I believe this is late 1990s. I think it was 99 built, and it has a lot of custom features. As you can see, it's not as cookie cutter as the others. Which there's some strengths to that too, which are you get a lot higher demand from tenants for homes that have a little more features like this. You know, historically we saw these prices in the 140s back in the day, so seeing these at 116.9 that we're able to sell them to our clients for fully rehabbed and renovated, it's one of those, again, times when we feel very excited that we have these properties available. In Indianapolis, the rent of $1,150 per month is getting close to the top of the market. So it's rare to see anything over $1,300 unless it's a special home or downtown condo high rise or something. So you're getting, again, that top of the tier tenant in properties like these. Here's our fees, of course, the management fee of 8%. I'll have Clint touch on the management fees at the end here when we get into property management. But these HOAs, there's homeowners associations, and they're very inexpensive here in Indy. But one of the things that we like about having an HOA in some of these neighborhoods is they take care of the entrances. It just feels like more of a community, especially for the tenants. In Indianapolis, our tax rate, you have to plan on it about being approximately 2% of the value of the home. Now, that's the guidelines. No one, though, can, it's the U.S. government, city government, and so no one can get these pinpointed exactly. So when we put the taxes for our clients, we just show what they are right now, and those can change. But it just gives you a rule of thumb to count on, not expecting it to ever be more than 2% of the value of the home. Insurance, we can help our clients get with a local insurance company. And then we like to plan on 4% vacancy and 4% maintenance, just as a way to kind of plan ahead and know what your full costs are going to be. And so, you know, all that adds up to is just under $10,000 a year cash flow off of a $116,000 purchase. So right now we're seeing, again, the highest cash flow for the lowest prices we've seen historically in Indianapolis. And now we're back to my favorites, of course, the Greatest Generation properties. This is an example that the tenant's actually been in this home for 4 years. This is a home that we've held ourselves forever, and we just have so much demand for these that it's not really fair for us to keep holding properties when we have so much demand. So rents, again, you know, on this one it's $715 a month. The reason that it's below where I normally expect to see these on Greatest Generation is that the tenant's been there so long. And so we don't want to keep raising rents on her. We kind of reward loyalty with tenants. But, you know, if this home ever went vacant, I would expect the rents to be closer to $800 when we re-rented it. And then again, back to the management fees and the 4% vacancies that we think our clients should try to plan on building in and expecting are in there. And it comes back to, again, $57,900. Gets you an average return of a little over $6,000 a year. So it's hard for me to argue with these. You know, this is where we get excited personally on owning ourselves. And I'll turn this over to Clint, my business partner, who runs the property management side. And if you remember back in that picture, he's the one that isn't as good looking as me. So here he is.
I hope you guys enjoyed the comedian there in his presentation, but we like to have a good time here. And hello to everyone out there, and I thank the Real Wealth Network for having Scott and I. It's always a pleasure to speak to you guys. As far as property management, like Scott alluded to earlier, we really feel like it is what brings our process full circle. If you hire a bad property manager, it doesn't matter how great the property is. You know, the renovation, it can really end a good situation pretty quickly. So it's something that we take very, very seriously. Communication is at the heart of our management process. We feel that keeping our owners informed as to what's going on is really what helps separate us from other property management companies. So we always try to communicate anything, whether it's good news or bad news, and I think that's something that's important to investors out there. Whenever you're interviewing property management companies, it's easy for a company just to sit around and say how things should go, but always ask what happens during the bad times. And we have a saying here in the office where we don't like problems, but when they happen, we run to them. And we feel that that's always the best case scenario. As far as communicating with our with our owners, and then overcoming any situation that could come up. So get into the meat and potatoes of it a little bit. Our regular monthly management fee is 10% of the gross rents. However, for Real Wealth Network clients, we offer a discount of 8%. There's no setup fee, no periods for vacancy. If we're not collecting rents and putting money in our clients' pockets, we don't make anything. And I think that that's very, very important. And Scott and I spoke at an event here recently where a guy from New York came with a lot of questions, and he said that he was paying a monthly fee for the last 6 months, even though his property wasn't rented. And that's absolutely mind-blowing to me. Like I said, if our clients aren't succeeding, we're not. The eviction process, there is no additional management charge for evictions when they happen. Thankfully here, we don't have a lot of evictions. We take rent collection extremely seriously here in the office, and that starts whenever we do our screening. We do a criminal background check, a credit check, and we also do a national eviction check as well. So we want to make sure that we get a good quality tenant in there, because there, once again, if we're not bringing in rents, we're not successful, and that's, you know, it's all about putting money in our clients' pockets. But if evictions were to occur, like I said, there's no additional charges for that. As far as the lease up fee, whenever we do have to renew a lease, or not necessarily renew a lease, but go find a tenant, re-screen a tenant, our normal fee is the first month's rent. However, again, for Real Wealth Network clients, we have a discount. That's 80% of the first month's rent. However, we always want to renew the leases. And here in Indianapolis, we do have periods where it's tough to lease properties, because we have some really, really brutal winters at times. And we had one this year, and we do everything we can not to have a lease end in November, December, January. Not only can the weather be poor, we also have the holidays to contend with. So we always make it seem like we're doing our tenants a favor. And for example, we would say, we'd hate to see you move out at Christmas time. Why don't we extend you out through March, because I hate for you to have to move out in the middle of Christmas and inclement weather. And 9 times out of 10, we're always able to do that. So our average lease is a little bit higher than most management companies. There again, you know, that's kind of assumptive, but I feel that we do a very good job of keeping those lease terms extended.
Can I just jump in there with a question?
Average vacancy rate for... Yeah, sure.
Sorry. Just had a question from one of the listeners. Would you consider Indianapolis to be tenant-friendly or landlord-friendly? Roughly how long would it take to get a delinquent tenant out of a property?
Great question. It used to be extremely landlord-friendly. However, whenever you had a lot of landlords that lost their property due to inexperienced investment, whenever we had the economic downturn, and it became a little less landlord friendly. However, when compared to other states here in the U.S., we're still extremely landlord friendly. If we were to have a tenant that were to get behind on rent, first thing first, we always try to work out some kind of agreement with them to be able to get for them to pay, because if they go out of the property, you're going to have vacancy periods. You may have to spruce the property up a little bit. So we always try to work that out. However, if a situation becomes where it's not fixable, you're looking at about a 25-day time period to be able to get the tenant out. And that is, that's not the actual court date. That's the actual time to be able to fully get the tenant out of your property. But rarely ever will you see a tenant just stay in the property, you know, after an eviction. I've only had that happen 4 times in my career. So I think compared, you know, we work a lot with people in California. There it's very tenant friendly, and I just don't see how people are even able to invest out there. But anyhow, I hope that answers your question.
Yep, that does it. Thanks.
Okay, you're very welcome. Average vacancy rate, 4%. Right now, we don't hold a property available much longer than a week. And if it's out there much longer than a week, then the rent is probably priced too high, because this is a very, very hot time for renting a property in the summer. You see a lot of people move during this time, so it's very, we're very, very quick to re-rent a property. Like I said, however, if you were to do the vacancy rates and how long it takes us, it's a little bit higher in the winter. We use a property management software that, once we load the property into our software platform, our rentals are spread out to 42 real estate websites for marketing. Our leasing agent's phone ring off the hook. I think that the marketing process is second to none. We also advertise in the MLS as well. There again, speaking about the vacancy length, about 2 weeks. And again, I just touched on it briefly, but that's the average over the course of the year. You see that a little bit larger in the winter, and a little less right now. Average rental price across our entire portfolio, $1,075. It's probably getting closer to $1,100 at this point, because rental rates have been climbing over the last few months here in Indy. And I don't know, I can't speak on the rental market in Australia, but here in Indianapolis, $1,075 gets you a really, really quality property in a great neighborhood. And we only manage properties in good neighborhoods, because that's where we're able to find our good tenants. And again, it's all about performance. We had a real estate investor that came to us from the West Coast that had been investing here for several years, and he had a portfolio of 20 some odd properties. And we actually turned him away, because it's so hard to manage properties in bad areas. So we just we stay away from that as much as possible, because this, nobody wins whenever that happens. Rehabs, over 2,000 rehabs of experience within our business. So we're able to do it much more efficiently than someone trying to do this on their own. And that's most of the crews we work with. We've been working for 7, 8, 9 plus years, and you built up a loyalty over that time. Okay. Summary, again, I touched on it earlier, streamlined communication. Communication is really what brings this full circle. We want to keep our clients up to date on everything that is going on. So when a person commits to a property and it's still under rehab, sometimes we have properties that are fully rehabbed. We always give halfway rehab pictures and an update, final pictures and a video, inspection reports, and I think Scott talked about this earlier. We have the property inspected by a third-party inspector at the end. We take those findings, work that punch list that we find from those findings, and then we have the property inspected again. So we want to make sure that once we transfer that over to a new owner, that property we found anything and everything that could be wrong with it. Also offer a home warranty. That's good for 1 year on the property. So that really helps our clients' expenses for sure. And we pay for it for that first year, but we see a lot of our clients renew that home warranty after year one. Rental and showing updates. We keep our clients up to date on any activity that's going on with the property. Almost 100% of the time our properties are always occupied whenever our client finally gets to the closing table. Closing, you don't close till everything is 100% complete in our process. And there again, that'll be something that's easy to gauge for our clients because of the system that we have as far as providing as much information as possible. We use First American Title, which is one of the largest title companies, if not maybe the largest. There's two large title companies here in the States. So it just kind of ensures you know, the process that everything is going to go smoothly. So that's really our process. It's something that we're really proud of. We take very seriously. We have people working around the clock to make this work. You know, with 24-hour maintenance on our rentals, we have someone that's always available to our clients. And you know, tonight is no exception. It's almost 11 p.m. PM here, and you know, we're very happy to be here sharing our company and our experiences with the Real Wealth Network.
I've just got a couple of quick questions. One was about the weather, and I've answered the question to the person who asked, but a lot of people mm-hmm. might be interested in knowing. I did have some personal experience because I've got two properties in Indianapolis, and I gather that you guys had one of the worst winters you've ever had in this winter
awful.
Just gone. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't get hurricanes or cyclones or anything like that, do you? You generally miss those?
No hurricanes or cyclones. You know, we do see, they're tornadoes from time to time. We haven't really had one touchdown in Indianapolis in my career, but, I mean, in Indiana in general, I mean, that could be something that happened. I mean, it would be very rare. The one extreme weather phenomenon that has happened quite a bit, you know, you do see quite a bit of hail. That's like a couple of storms a year in very localized areas within Indianapolis. So we always have you know, a couple dozen properties a year that we do have to assist with our property owners as far as hail claims, but that's something that is covered by insurance. And you know, that's really the only extreme weather phenomenon that we really see on a semi-regular basis, and like I said, it's not too often.
And to arrange a tour with you, we just go through Real Wealth Network in the same way as we would normally?
Absolutely.
And I've had one question here. Do people buy from you sight unseen? Is that something you're prepared to do?
About 90%. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
About 90% of the time, our clients are buying sight unseen. We are staff to be able to do tours, but the reality is with our process and updating our clients, we don't feel that it is fully necessary. And it's not necessarily that we feel that it's not necessary. Our clients feel comfortable in the communication to where they just don't spend the time and the money to be able to travel to Indianapolis. But that's not to say that, you know, we don't accommodate anyone that wants to come here to, you know, and tour our market with us. We, in fact, it's something that we enjoy. Gets us out of the nerdery, if you will, and gives us a chance to communicate with the outside world outside of our office.
Yeah, of course. I've just had some questions in relation to population and employment growth. I think I recall you saying on an earlier slide that the population of Indianapolis is around 850,000. Was that about right?
That is. That's Indianapolis proper. A lot of times you see 1.3, 1.4 million if you were to like Google Indianapolis population, because they include some of the metropolitan areas like Carmel, Noblesville, Greenwood, some of those areas, which I've always kind of joked about. I think Indianapolis has kind of cheated including those areas in some of the stats to make us look a little bit bigger than we are.
And is the population and employment opportunities expected to grow in the foreseeable future?
Yes, and I think that has to do more with just kind of the spotlight that our city has had over the last decade or so. Scott talked about it earlier. I know it sounds kind of crazy to say that sports do a lot for our industry, but the sporting events that we've had here have really shed a lot of positive light on our city. We hosted the 2012 Super Bowl. We host the men's basketball Final Four every 3 or 4 years. You know, the NCAA headquarters are here. Then popular sports teams like the Pacers and Colts. We get a lot of good publicity from those sporting events. Then on top of that, we've had a huge renovation of our convention center. and we're attracting a lot of conventions as well. And then as far as just the job growth, you know, we're attractive across the country just because of our price of real estate is so inexpensive here in the United States. When people are coming in looking to buy land to bring in a new factory, you know, it's a lot more attractive to do so here than, say, opposed to Los Angeles, because our cost of real estate is so inexpensive. So with all that job growth, we expect our economy to continue booming. We were in the running for the Super Bowl again in 2016. I think we lost out on that, but we've got a lot of other unique opportunities that's coming up, you know, that will really showcase Indianapolis in a positive way.
Hey, Clint. This is Ben from the Real Wealth Network.
Hey, Ben.
Hey, got a quick question for Scott or Clint. You know, you talked about the two different types of homes, obviously the new constructions and the next generations. And I think you said that you typically do about 20 renovations or 20 homes a month. Is that accurate, and is that with both of those types?
It is with both of those types. We have a little bit more of the newer construction model than we do of the older construction model. And you must be a Trekkie. You said next generation. It's actually the greatest generation.
Yeah, I did. I am. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had to bust you up.
Freudian slip there, yeah.
There you go. But really, it's the reason why we have more of the newer construction is a lot of our clients like that it's built with newer systems in place. When I say systems, like plumbing and electrical, that's been very attractive. And then the second reason for that is the rehabs on the greatest generation are a little bit more time consuming and labor intense. So it's just kind of naturally skews itself. But 20 properties a month is very accurate. We actually have 29 remodels going right now. And
wow.
with an average remodel time of 2 weeks, we're actually a little on the high side probably than the 20. But 20 is a good number to. I don't want to overshoot what we
sure.
what we have available. But 20
and then
is a good number.
Typically, you said you have more new construction than you do greatest generation. So just being real rough here, is it more like maybe 14 of the new construction and 6 of the greatest generation, something like that?
Yeah, I'd say that'd be good. You know, probably it may even be more like 65-35%, you know, somewhere in that. And you know, that number can vary month to month.
Of course.
You know, the other part of that greatest generation, as Scott alluded to earlier, we are so selective on the areas that we take. You can find those greatest generation properties all over the city. But 75% of them are properties that we simply won't manage because we don't believe in them. So it also eliminates a lot of the greatest generation just based off of how selective we are with which ones we bring on.
Makes perfect sense. Thank you.
Just on those greatest generation homes, given that they're a little bit older, is there any thought or evaluation given to the damage that snow might cause on the roofs?
You know, with the exception of this last winter, we really didn't see a lot of damage on the roofs. We had so much ice right at the very beginning of the year. We had a combination of 13 inches of ice and snow. We didn't see any problems with roofs holding up, but something that we saw as the snow melted, there was ice dams that had formed in the crevices of the roofs, where after the snow melted, we did have some roof leaks pop up. However, that's really the first time in my 14 years in this business that I saw such a phenomenon happening. The weather challenge that most property management companies would see here within Indianapolis whenever it gets cold like that would be busted pipes. Whenever it gets freezing temperatures outside, you know, pipes can freeze. So it really, whenever properties become vacant is when that possibility could happen. We do not winterize our homes because we feel like winterization is only about 70% effective. You could winterize a home and it could still go bad. The pipes could still burst. We actually turn the utilities on anytime a property is vacant. We'll set the thermostat to 55 and it's much cheaper just to keep the utilities on, because we're not planning on the property being, number one, vacant for that long, and two, we just don't believe in that winterization process, that, you know, turning utilities on is much more effective, and that's something that we take care of completely here in the office.
That makes sense. I've just got one other question here, and that is something that probably affects Australians or people internationally more than anyone else, and that is the process of collecting rent and paying the money into bank accounts. Is that all done electronically?
That's a great question. I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I think that that's something that separates us from other property management companies. We are very, very serious about collecting our rent via auto bank deduct, so where it's kind of the set it and forget it type mentality. So once we do a lease signing, we do everything we can to set up our tenants on that that automatic deduct. So at the beginning of the month, it helps our collection process without us having to get on the phones and, hounding our tenants to pay. So that's something that we take very seriously. However, not everyone is on that. We start our rent collection efforts on the third of the month, and that's, you know, within the office we're calling. We have to make property visits if need be, but that's something that's very, very, very strict within our world here at Realty Wealth. But the other aspect to your question would be, we pay our owners around the 11th of the month. And we say around the 11th of the month because the 11th could, excuse me, actually fall on a weekend or holiday. We try to err to the earlier side, but it's hard to do too much earlier than that. So, I mean, sometimes it could fall back to the 12th or 13th. And we probably 95% or even more of our owners are set up to receive their funds via ACH. So our statements go out the day everything is processed. Once our owners receive that statement to their email, then they can expect their funds to post the following morning.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. That's all of the questions I've got at the moment. Just while we're waiting for any more questions, I'm just going to take control back.
Okay.
We've just got a quick presentation from Larry. Larry, are you still there?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, I'll just bring yours up now.
Well, Scott and Clint, want to thank you. Very, very well done. Looks like a very attractive market, I think.
Well, we thank you for having us. Anytime you need us, let us know.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate it. It was very informative.
Pleasure's all ours. Thanks again, and let us know what we can do to assist your clients.
I'm sure they'll be in touch, and they will all be in touch through Real Wealth Network. And if anybody needs to make contact, I'm sure Ben, you're the right person to contact. Is that correct?
Yep. Absolutely. You can. I can always be emailed at Ben@realwealthnetwork.com. Ben is spelled B-E-N. Once again, Ben@realwealthnetwork.com. You can also go on to the realwealthnetwork.com's website, where we highlight all of our different markets, including Indianapolis. I think there's a little picture of Scott and Clint on there somewhere. So we encourage everyone, get as much information as you can off of our website, and then feel free to go online, join the Real Wealth if you haven't already. You can sign up for a strategy session with me, and we can talk about your goals and objectives, and we can compare and contrast the various markets.
Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome, John.
Larry.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, not a really presentation per se, but just a few little infographic slides, and they all three really are talking about our rental market, and of course that's kind of what we've been talking about for the last few years here at the Global Mastermind. And then, like it says right here in the slide, you know, rental home shortage is America's next housing crisis. I've been talking about the U.S. Census, talking about the population growth growing at the rapid rate that it is. It's about one new person every 10 seconds in the U.S. So if you do the math, that's just a lot of people on an annualized basis. Further demand, we have about a third of all people, young adults between 18 and 30, about 30% of them are all still living at home. And they are now, you know, as the economy is improving, they're starting to move out of the house and looking for their own place. So that's kind of what these slides are talking about is, you know, the U.S. is facing a housing crisis. The time the nation is dealing with shortages of rental housing, a problem that will become increasingly acute in years to come. And these next few slides definitely illustrate that. The number of housing units completed per capita in the U.S. remains a fraction of historic averages. If you looked at that slide, you just turned it, but if you look at that slide, it was just continuously showing a decline in units available. Look over towards the right side, about the year 2009, the availability of housing had just took a drastic drop. Last year or so, 2011, 2012, it's starting to show a little bit of a rebound, but we are way below historic averages, so we do have a housing shortage here. Okay, now you can go ahead. And this is really talking about, this is basically the Google searches for people going to the website and looking for rental housing. You can see that has definitely been going up. On the far left, it's 2009 to current time. Over the last 5 years, if you will, there's been a steady increase in people going to the website and say, hey, where is there housing available? It's very jagged like a saw. Obviously, in the winter months, you see a lot less activity and more activity in the summer. But if you look at the graph as a whole, it's definitely showing a lot of people looking for housing there. And then that kind of leads to this final draft there, again, about 2009. This is talking about the rental vacancy rate, as Clint and Scott were talking about. The rental vacancy rate in 2009 was kind of peaked out when the economy was bad, and it just took a massive plunge down. And there's just very, very few vacancies out there anymore. So people investing in real estate in the U.S., I'm showing you basically national averages. The markets we talk about, just like India today, for the most part, those numbers are even more impressive than what the national average is. But there is definitely some need for housing in the U.S., so that need obviously creates some long-term sustainable investments here in the U.S.
Thanks for that, Larry. As always, that kind of information is very valuable to investors, and we all like to see the numbers going the right way for us. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, we're definitely set up for sustainability.
Well, I don't have any more questions at this stage. If you guys don't have anything more to add, then we can end it right now.
Ben? No, this is Ben. Okay? I'm good. I think that we got everything we needed.
Well, I'd like to thank you all, Ben, Scott, Clint, and Larry. It's been a great presentation, and certainly everybody here will have enjoyed it, I'm sure. It'll be put up on our website for anybody to watch in the future, and I certainly hope that it drives some business in your direction.
Well, thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks very much, everybody. Thanks very much for participating.
You bet. Have a great day, guys.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.